Good evening to all of you. It's really good to see you. Is that weird saying that? It just is. It's good to see you. And I suppose it's good to be seen. There was a dear beloved friend of mine down in Florida, older gentleman. He would always say it's better to be seen than viewed. I said, well, he's got a point about that. But it is truly good to see you. I do enjoy our times together on Wednesday. I like being around other people that love God and are concerned about His Word and interested in it. And it's His Word we're in this evening. We're in the Exodus account. I want to refrain from saying the Exodus story, because story brings to mind fiction. This is the account of what happened to Israel as they were delivered from Egyptian bondage. The particular section we're in this evening is Exodus 8, beginning in and around verse 20. We've concluded the first three plagues, the plagues of the water of Egypt being turned into blood, the plague of the frogs, and the plague of the gnats. It's always true when you read back through a section of Scripture, you notice something you haven't seen before. It's what makes Scripture wonderful. For some reason, you read it and read it and read it, and then again you read it and you find something you never noticed. You see a pattern. You see something that you maybe would bring something new to mind. Maybe it's just a change of experience between readings. Maybe it's just the book itself. It just tells us something different each and every time. I noticed something about the first three plagues that are not true for the rest. All three of those first three plagues have something in common in the way that the plague itself is started. Did anybody else see that, notice that, think that interesting? When the water is going to be turned to blood, how does it say that it happened? Okay. And when he lifted up the staff, chapter 7 and verse 20, what did he do with it? He struck the Nile. Okay, he kind of, I don't know what it would look like, but in some form or fashion, he smote the Nile River, and it became blood. What did he do in chapter 8 and in verse 6? Stretched out his hand over the waters and frogs came up. Okay, he was told to stretch out his hand over the canals and over the pools of water. And then in the third plague, chapter 8, verse 17. It's interesting that these first three plagues, when you think about the fact that they also happened to Israel, the first three plagues have to do with kind of nature. There is a plague against the river. There is a plague against not just the river, but the bodies of water that would have fed off the river, the pools that they had made, the canals, the irrigation systems they would have had. And finally, the dust is stricken by these plagues. These were the plagues that would have affected Israel as well. As you move forward, those first three plagues, you can think about them as the earth being struck. Who is struck beginning in the fourth plague? Specifically Egypt. And the Lord, through Moses, makes this point to Pharaoh. Okay, during the plague of the fourth plague, the flies, Exodus 8 and verse 21, we see repetitions of the same pattern. Let my people go that they may serve me. If not, I will do this thing against you and your house. That is a pattern that you see consistently throughout. With patterns, you want to notice when things are different. Right? You want to notice changes. You want to notice differences. That's what's so interesting about Genesis 5 and the list of people from from Adam to Noah. All of them die except for Enoch. He's the one that breaks the pattern, and so he sort of grabs your attention. The plagues are written the same way. There's this formula that they all follow, But then from time to time you get these differences. And the differences are very important. They're there for a reason. The fourth plague, beginning Exodus 8 and verse 20, you see the difference in verse 22. It says, "But on that day I will set apart the land of Goshen, where my people dwell, so that no swarms of flies shall be there, that you may know that I am the Lord in the midst of the earth. Thus I will put a division between my people and your people. Tomorrow this sign shall happen." Now after that verse, it goes back to the regular pattern. Bad things happen. Pharaoh's sad about it. Worried, so the plague goes away. All the plagues that follow don't affect Israel, beginning here with flies. What's the focus of these next few plagues? What's the point of them? Specifically Egypt and the kingdom of Egypt. Okay, the land that Egypt and Pharaoh, as the ruler of Egypt, has control over. All of these plagues attack some vital form of their nation, first starting with flies. Now, what would have been the problem with this plague? Because, I mean, we have flies now, but so how is this different? Multitudes, okay? This is a numbers game. And not only that, but have you read a little bit into what they believe the type of flies that they were? It's widely believed they're horse flies or deer flies or something that bites. No one's really certain which species, but most are convinced that they bite. Now, it can be a horse fly, an inch long, or it can be like when we were in South Carolina, it can be sand gnats. Okay? You can't see them, but you feel them, right? They bite you from the knee down. Whatever it was, almost everyone's in agreement that these would have been biting flies of some variety. What does this do to your nation? This was a plague against people and animal alike. Okay, and this would have been a crippling thing. You don't do anything in this environment. Kind of like Florida during love bug season. It's just everything shut off. One memory that I always bring to mind with this plague, the town I grew up in Florida, Bell, is surrounded on three sides by dairy farms. You can imagine the bugs. And the swarms of bugs. And it was so much so that if you drove by them on a night, it sounded like rain. Not from rain, but from bugs. Little, gnats and flies and things like that. And I always thought about that with this plague. You're talking about just flies everywhere. This cripples the nation. Okay, you can't do anything in this sort of environment. But there's this division being made between Israel and Egypt. And this division remains. Even in the finale ultimate plague, there's a threat of it, but Israel is still cordoned off. Israel is given the way to escape the destroyer, the angel of death. Whereas Egypt doesn't seem to be given that opportunity. How does Pharaoh react to the fourth plague? Yeah. Stay here, but go sacrifice to your God here, okay? Why suggest going to sacrifice to God all of a sudden? Other than it was the thing they had asked for. Yeah, the God that caused this is the one they're going to go try worship, right? So there's definitely maybe an aspect of this where go appease him and make this stop. Pharaoh calls Moses and Aaron to do this the same way he called him with the frogs. Okay? And with the plagues, as they get more and more serious, Pharaoh becomes more and more consistent in terms of trying to get free of it. Okay, if you notice the plague of gnats, it doesn't even say Pharaoh tried to get rid of it. Yes. And every time it did. There was never a, you know, I'm sorry it didn't happen today, we'll try again tomorrow. It was always, and exactly when too. When he said tomorrow, he meant tomorrow. Did anyone else notice reading through the plagues that tomorrow happens a lot? I don't know why, but for some reason that just stuck out in, when I went through this again, and when I read it in the printed out version. During the plague of frogs, Pharaoh asked that the plague be taken away tomorrow, and it happens. During the plague of the flies, Moses says, tomorrow this sign's going to happen. The next plague, which was the livestock being destroyed, some of them, okay? The Lord says, tomorrow I will do this thing in the land. The plague that follows, the hailstorm, or rather, kind of plague after the next one, the hailstorm, this time tomorrow this will happen. It just happens again and again. Not just here's what, but specifically when and how. This isn't coincidence. This isn't it started hailing and so Moses said, well, look, God brought this on you. It's always, I'm going to do it and you're going to know that I did it because I'm going to give it a time frame. And tomorrow is, it happens a lot in these nine plagues. Logical people seem to think, well, the river's been turned to blood. Maybe we ought to listen, you know. But there's a lot that clouds logic. And Pharaoh's eat up with it. Kind of like we are. Kind of the same way we do. And more on that in a minute. I want to get a little further into the plagues before we go further on that particular point. Pharaoh says to Moses, please go within the land and do this. Moses objects. Why? What objection does Moses offer to sacrificing within the land itself? First of all, it's not what the Lord asked for. Okay, so there is that objection, which is the most important. This is not what God wanted. And second, it would be an abomination to Egypt. It was asked last time, what was the nature of that abomination? I don't have a better answer. I went looking for one. And there's not a consensus. Most seem to believe that the nature of the sacrifices themselves would have been an abomination. And the other most, I guess when you have two of them, say that it's probably they're worshiping Yahweh in the midst of Egyptian gods. I didn't get any consensus on that. In either case, it would have been detestable to Egypt, and they would have been threatened with stoning just on account of that. He tells them, we have to go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord. And so Pharaoh says, I'll let you go do this, just don't go very far away. He's really grasping here. And you know, Moses doesn't back down. Of course, the Lord would never back down from Pharaoh. And he says, I'll take this away from you. Did you notice the little tag that was thrown in on this fourth plague? I'll take this away from you. The end of verse 29. What did your Bible say there? Right. Don't deal deceitfully with me anymore. Okay. I love the ESV rendering. Don't cheat anymore. Pharaoh's been cheating. He's been saying, sure, I'll let him go. And then when it comes time to do it, not doing it. In spite of Pharaoh's cheating, God continues to give him chances. He continues to allow this process to go on. Pharaoh's hardening his heart, but God's given him plenty of chances to do so. Again, we made this point last time, but this is by design, all of these things. The Lord removes the swarms of flies. It says in verse 31 that not one remained. God's power over this plague is absolute. He can both bring it to pass and cause it to go away, as his power in bringing it is matched only by his power in taking it away. And yet Pharaoh hardens his heart again. At what point in the story does it start to say that God hardened his heart? You remember which plague it says that? I'll give you a hint. It's roughly halfway. The boils, number 6. Okay. There is a split in this. Up until the 6th plague, it says either that Pharaoh's heart was hardened, kind of that third person view, or it says that Pharaoh hardened his heart. Right? He did it specifically. After plague 6, along with those is added, like it says in 9 and verse 12, the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh. We've talked a lot about this. There's both sides of this being played here. Pharaoh's doing it as well as the Lord. With the 5th plague, did you notice that there is another little added detail? There's another little break in the pattern. Chapter 9 and verse 1, thus the middle of the verse, thus says the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. That is standard fare. But in verse 2, if you refuse to let them go and still hold them, so not just if you refuse, but if you keep doing the thing you're doing, I'm going to bring this plague on you. The plague in beginning of chapter 9 is the death of the livestock. How do we know that not all the livestock died, even though verse 6 says all the livestock of the Egyptians died? Okay, so there's a distinction. The livestock of Israel was not destroyed. How do we know it's not all of Egypt's either? They took the gold and such, right? The possessions, right? What else? Yeah, how are boils going to fall on the livestock if there are no livestock? Right? And that, and then there's another one. If you look at the plague of hail, Moses specifically says in verse 19 of chapter 9, therefore send, get your livestock. Wait a minute. I thought they were all gone. Okay? This is an expression. Okay? This is an expression of how widespread the damage and loss was. This wasn't a literal every single commercial animal in Egypt died. Okay, this is an expression of both the how wide it was spread and the severity. Yes, ma'am. Well, they had livestock. They detested shepherds.
It's just shepherds.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and shepherds kept sheep.
Yeah.
Sheep and goats, right?
But obviously they hunted some now, but they would have hunted them in the
desert. They may be more focused on cows, you know, swine, that kind of thing. That is true. It may be some of both. Because even today, you know, nomadic peoples are sort of looked on as, you know, don't trust them, you know, sometimes. Maybe a version of that sort of feeling is kind of extended to them. Could be. Yeah, and the king of Egypt puts Joseph's brothers in charge of his own livestock. So he's got to have something, you know. When you say we're going down a rabbit hole, I go, well, those aren't livestock, so they'd be fine. Well, in some circles it is, you know, people raise them, but the Lord again, verse 4 of chapter 9, he's going to make a distinction. He says, I want you to know, the last time I told you, yes, there are only going to be flies on you. And so there's that distinction. But with this one, I'm going to kill all your livestock. There's still going to be this distinction. Okay, tomorrow I'm going to do the thing, verse 5. And it says literally in verse 6, and the next day the Lord did this thing. All the livestock die. Did you notice what Pharaoh did in verse 7? Go look and see if that's actually what happened. Go look and check on this. Not only being shown God's power to just, you know, wave his hand over your animal workforce and your livelihood and just say, well, this is all gone now, but the ability to say, no, none of the ones over in Goshen are going to be touched. Pharaoh went to go check on this, and that is exactly the way it happened. Same thing in verse 7. Not one of the livestock of Israel was dead. And then his heart was hardened again. Beginning in the sixth plague. The sixth plague has a rather curious start. And I've wondered about this, and I read something today that might make sense of it. But let's talk about it first. How does the sixth plague happen? Moses does it. So that's a distinction. Okay, which there might be something to say about that. And someone else, how did he do it? What did he do this time? Yeah, this one's different. This one feels different. Just when you're reading through, you know, there's the smiting of the water, and there's smiting of the light. I mean, the livestock, they just kind of, you know, fall sick and die. But with this one, Moses is the one doing it, and he takes soot from the kiln or from the furnace, not an oven, not a fireplace, but somewhere where you produce something, right? Like you would smelt metal, or you would bake bricks. It's some sort of industrial sort of oven. And he takes it to Pharaoh, and then throws it in the air, and then I don't know what that would have looked like, but all of a sudden everybody fell down with boils. It doesn't matter what kind of boils these are. There's been arguments about that. I don't think it matters a great deal. Doesn't matter what variety it is, blisters, boils, or anything in that category. This would have been absolutely miserable. And it wasn't isolated to people. Their animals had it too. What happens to the nation of Egypt during the period where these boils are on them? You'd stop. Everything stops. Pharaoh stops. The magicians make their final appearance during the sixth plague. They gave up trying to do the things God was doing during the plague of the gnats. But then with the sixth plague, they said, we can't even come before Pharaoh anymore. They couldn't stand before Moses. Okay, maybe they've been here this whole time. Maybe refusing to challenge him directly, but they have yet to actually back down from him. But on this one, they don't stand before Moses. Okay. As we start to get into the sixth plague and the seventh plague and the eighth plague, there's a change in how the Egyptians feel about God. Whereas Pharaoh does not. With the sixth plague, the magicians, they realize they can't stand before Moses. With the seventh plague, some of the Egyptians listen to Moses' advice and bring their animals inside. During the eighth plague, the plague of the locusts, prior to that plague, they come to Pharaoh and they ask him, don't you realize that Egypt has been destroyed? There's this shift in how they feel that's not matched by Pharaoh. Pharaoh seems to be more and more contrite as the story goes forward, but we know it's not real because every time it comes time to do the thing of letting him go, he refuses, in spite of what he says. Egypt shifts the way they feel about God. Pharaoh does not. What other thoughts do you have up through plague number six? I know I didn't discuss everything there, but I wanted to sort of see what you thought up until then. You notice anything different? You notice anything strange? Any questions you might have? Thank
you. That doesn't mean the whole flock is all the
way. Right. Yeah, I think there is a ramping up as it goes forward. I think the text gives it to us in groups of three. We think about the 10 plagues. If it's 10 plagues, then we should read in the text 10 plagues in order. That's not the way it reads. It reads 9 plagues in order, and then a break, and then the Passover, and then the 10th plague, which is, by comparison, fairly short, and it breaks from the whole pattern. Because Moses, Pharaoh lets them go. And then they have the Exodus itself. Back to the point I made earlier about maybe a way to think about this being organized, I think it's in three groups of three. The first 3 plagues, the ones that happened to the whole earth, happened to both sides, Egypt and Israel. They are terrible, but they're not fatal and they're not debilitating. You could argue frogs is debilitating, but you could still live. This next set of three, the three that are distinguished from where God draws the line between Israel and Egypt, the next 3 plagues really cripple the land of Egypt, but not destroy the land of Egypt. Okay, flies were crippling, but not mortal. Okay, irritating, awful, torturous, yes, but not mortal. The 5th plague, the livestock dying, not all of the livestock are killed. A terrible, debilitating thing, but not a mortal wound to a nation. The plague of boils, torturous, awful, painful, but not a mortal wound to a nation. What about the 3 that come afterwards? Those are the ones where really Egypt's destroyed. You have the great hailstorm, You have the hailstorm where it mentions that everything is broken, everything's knocked down. Afterwards, the Egyptians come to Pharaoh and they say, don't you see we're destroyed? Right, there's a hint. The next one is what? Locusts. That destroys your nation. Because now you can't eat. Now there's no food. Your livestock can't eat anything. What's left after the plague is destroyed in the hailstorm. Now all of your green food is eaten. There's nothing out in the field to grow. What about the 9th one? The 9th one destroys a nation. Because you can't see to move around. When you have nothing green to eat, now you have no ability to grow it. There's never going to be a fix unless the lights come back on outside. Those types of things kill a nation. And so you get these very different groups of 3. You get the 3 that happen to everybody. You get the 3 that are debilitating but not mortal. And then you get the 3 that are mortal. That are really crushing blows to nations. The text offers that distinction as well. The first 3 plagues happen to both sides. In plague number 4, God comes to Pharaoh and says, specifically, I'm going to send this on your servants and your people and into your houses. And he draws that line between Egypt and Pharaoh. Look at what he says right before the plague of hail. It's like this circle of who God is going to affect with his plagues gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. It starts with everybody, and then it moves into Egypt. And then with the 7th plague, God draws the final circle around Pharaoh himself. Chapter 9 and verse 14, we get a break in the pattern. The verse before it, let my people go that they may serve me. That's the pattern. The break is in verse 14. For this time, I will send my plagues on you yourself, and on your servants and on your people, so that you may know there is none like me in all the earth. For by now I could have put out my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, and you would have been cut off from the earth. God saying, listen, if I wanted to cut you off, I could have done it already. Kind of telling us there's a difference between the ones I just did and the ones that are coming. I could have done this. But then he goes on. But for this purpose I have raised you up to show you my power, so that my name may be proclaimed in all the earth. You are still exalting yourself against my people and will not let them go. So God says in plague number 7, I've put you here so that you can experience this. You have rejected me, so now you're going to see it. You're going to see what I'm capable of, or at least some fragment of it. Back to the pattern in verse 18. Behold, about this time, tomorrow, there's our word, I will cause very heavy hail to fall, such as never have been in Egypt from the day it was founded until now. This is also another reference to, it's going to be worse than you have ever had before. Back in verse 19. This is the first time God said, here's your way out of it. Right? With all of the six that come before it, it's just, I'm going to bring this thing upon you. And then we get Pharaoh refusing to comply. But with plague number 7, what does God offer? You can go bring all your stuff in. There's a way out of this. There's a path even now for you to escape. That impresses me that God would at this point offer Pharaoh a chance. After 6 times you have rejected my call to let you go, on time number 7, I'm bringing this awful, terrible thing, but here's your way out of it. Bring in everything that's in the field. Whatever's outside will die. Go ahead.
I wonder if the people that had trained Pharaoh, given the last plague, would thought of by God, Lord of hosts, to save the cattle.
Perhaps. Isn't it funny? It convinced the people who didn't have absolute power. The ones who weren't in charge, they were convinced. But the one holding all the cards and holding all the power said, no, I'd rather have it. I'd rather keep it. The fact that God offers Pharaoh and by extension Egypt forgiveness, and some of them take it. Some of them acknowledge, oh yes, this God is serious. This is the true God. We better listen. We better bring our animals in. That's always impressed me with the Egyptians. We don't want to paint Egypt with Pharaoh's paintbrush. Okay, because Pharaoh's not a great person here. But there were Egyptians that would hear it and listen and obey. And whoever brought their stuff in had it saved. In verse 21, whoever did not pay attention to the word of the Lord left his slaves and his livestock in the field. If there's one verse in this whole chapter that preaches itself, that's it. Those who did not listen to the word of the Lord, they had the choice. They were shown the evidence. They believed that evidence, and some did not. Some rejected it. In this plague, something happens 3 times with these last 3 plagues, which I find interesting. In verse 22 of chapter 9, Moses is told to stretch out his hand toward heaven. First time he's been asked to do that. The first few times it's either hadn't been indicated how the plague comes along, or more commonly the staff is stretched out or the staff strikes whatever is going on. With the 7th one, Moses stretches out his hands toward heaven. with plague number 8, the plague of locusts, it says in verse 12 of chapter 10, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt. So more than just these individual things, there's this broad sort of, you know, display of power. He's gesturing in a different fashion. Back in verse 21, Moses is told to stretch out your hand toward heaven. Things have really gotten more serious. Things have escalated. We've gone from striking the dust and throwing dust in the air and striking the river to holding up your hand against heaven and against earth itself. And these plagues that fall in this third category are appropriately devastating. The seventh plague, the plague of hail. What exactly happened? Hail and fire and thunder. Okay. I think it is. My opinion, it is. There's thunder, which could be fire. If lightning is flashing continually, as it certainly can, God has control over that. I think this is probably the world's worst thunderstorm. And that's not saying, well, it must not have been a big deal. I mean, worse than anything we've ever seen. Worse than anything our nation has ever seen. This may very well be the worst thunderstorm that has ever happened. A thunderstorm so bad that the hail destroys everything. You know. It says there, the aftermath of this in chapter 9, verse 25, for one, it kills everything out in the field, both man and beast. The people who were outside could not get away from it fast enough to keep from being killed themselves. And then it says it struck down every plant of the field and broke every tree of the field. We know of hailstorms knocking down crops. When's the last time you saw a hailstorm knock down trees? Okay. The closest thing I've ever seen to this, Kentucky had an ice storm several years ago, where everything 10 foot off the ground froze and broke off. Okay, the weight of the ice just breaks everything. But this wasn't an ice storm. This was a hailstorm. So bad it did this.